Welcome to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast.
Okay, welcome everybody back to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. My name is Drew. We are here with Eddie and Tomas, and we have a number of things that we want to cover today for the before we get to the Australian Grand Prix. First up, let's talk about Carlos Sainz's recovery. Will he be back in the driver's seat, or is Ollie Bearman stepping in as he's already in Australia for the F2 race? Then we're going to talk about Ferrari's chase of Red Bull and Leclerc's performance in Jeddah. And that was shadowed a little bit by Ollie Bearman's debut, but it's definitely something we need to talk about. Audi is now making a big game-changing acquisition for Sauber in 20. And I guess we're going to discuss who should sign with Audi and what their entrance into the F1 world is going to look like. Oscar Piastri and Danny Ric are both at their home race this weekend. We're going to talk about who's under more pressure and who is more likely to outperform their teammate this weekend. Since Albert Park is notorious for some red flags, we're going to be predicting the number of red flags that we have this weekend and who will be the guilty crashers. And lastly, we're going to discuss what went on last weekend in Jeddah with Nico Hülkenberg and K-Mag pulling an absolute strategy flex. And was that fair? Do we think that there should be some rule changes so that this doesn't happen in the future? But to start us off, let's talk about Carlos. And, you know, we briefly chatted before the podcast started about Carlos being better. But, you know, in full story, he did go under the knife and he is recovering from a pretty serious surgery. So let's discuss that. What do you guys think about Carlos? Do you think he's going to be back in the seat this weekend? Or do you think Ollie Bearman's going to be filling that seat for him?
I mean, we'll see after free practice. You know me about free practice, right? It's my favorite time of the race.
This guy. Yeah. You know what, Ed? Let's wait until after free practice and see who's sitting in there. Like, come on.
I mean, let's be fair. I mean, Carlos Sainz, he is, like, you know, a really good driver, but he did go under the knife. Ollie Bearman, he did perform really well, so... Either which way, it's a win-win for Fred Vasseur and the Tifosi. So either which way, everyone's happy. But I will say, though, it's going to be good. But Thomas, how about you, man?
Like Ed said, win-win for all around, whether it's Mr. Carlos Sainz or Mr. Ollie Bearman. I do think, just personal opinion, I do think Carlos Sainz is going to be back in the car, just because last GP after surgery he was already basically in the pits watching the race live as it went on, so that tells me he, you know, recovered pretty fast and should be good to go. So I'm hoping, you know, we're gonna see him in the GP, but either way, no laws here. Both drivers are welcome. It's gonna be an interesting race.
I agree. I think, you know, the appendicitis is one of those things that, like, happens all the time, you know, and they got F1 money, so I'm sure they probably have the best surgeons on the planet taking care of this dude. That being said, I'm going to follow that up with another question based on the same thing. What would you rather have? Would you rather have a Carlos Sainz at 80% or an Ollie Bearman at 100?
Ollie. Good question.
Ollie 100%.
I don't know.
Because I'm Sainz. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit different for me. I would like to see some variation. So I'm going to go with Ollie. I think that would be another very, very interesting race to see if Carlos Sainz sits out.
I'm on the other side of that, Tomas. Carlos Sainz just got, like, a really good time at Jeddah at Mercedes, what is that, convenience area. I guess having a meeting with our boy Toto Wolff. And if he had a little bit of an inkling that he might be joining this team, maybe he'll try to show up and show out for Australia. It's a fast track.
And for everyone not watching the video, Ed just pointed to his Mercedes hat, being Carlos talking to Toto Wolff and insinuating that he's going to be joining Mercedes next year. While we have this quick moment, let's do a plug. If everyone that is listening to the podcast, if you like what you guys hear and, you know, this is something that you guys want to follow more often, you know, we'd love the support. So if you guys want to jump into the Discord, that'd be awesome. If you can like, subscribe, share the podcast with all your F1 buddies, that would be fantastic. We have just debuted into the top 100 at number 79 in the Canadian news sports podcast. So we are making a little bit of waves and moving forward a little bit. And we just want to spread the love a little bit further. So if you guys could do that, that would be fantastic. But let's get back to some F1 talk because that's why everybody's here. Last weekend, you know, everybody was taking a look at Ollie Bearman, and he was, you know, obviously the, you know, the man of the hour, you know, so to speak, right? But realistically, like, Charles Leclerc was looking really nice and really fast in that Ferrari. And, you know, I think of the top teams, he's definitely the one, you know, taking Ferrari to that next level. What do you guys think about Ferrari making bigger leaps forward than, you know, obviously McLaren and Mercedes right now? And where do you see Ferrari moving forward? Like, do you think that there's an ability for them to catch Red Bull at this point if they keep making improvements like they have already this year?
I mean, for improvements wise, like, we all know that they have the money, they have the expertise, they have the engineering backing for that. I think their main problem is reliability. They have the speed. We all know that. They know. We know that they're a quali car. We all know that Leclerc is fast. Are they reliable? We won't know that until, like, you know, the actual race in itself. But that's their own. I think that's their only crux that's stopping them right now from really competing with Red Bull. And that, I think, once they get that done, then it's going to be a show. Tomas, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. What you said, they have the money, they have the means to grab the talent if they so chose to. Do I see any more improvements this year? Yes, I think this is the track that they're, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a track they said, I think they're going to bring out the upgrades or the first upgrades, I read somewhere. So that's going to be interesting if that's the case. Second thing is, I just wanted to touch up on is, I'm not sure if this has been confirmed or anything, but I saw it on the news channels that Ferrari is talking to essentially like Red Bull engineers and like Red Bull team members, like on the internal part, like even Adrian Newey. So it's getting really, really serious. And, if they do end up snatching their top talent, that's going to be very, very interesting to, it's going to level the playing field. And then it's going to be really interesting to see how it stacks up against Red Bull. So if, yeah, they have a long way to go, but I think the improvement is definitely there. And I think they are going to reach it eventually.
I'm going to piggyback off both of your ideas, because I think you guys both hit the nail on the head. Like, you know, Ed, you were talking about them having the money and the time and the technicalities, and then Thomas, you brought up the fact that, you know, they have been speaking to some of the key people over at Red Bull. And, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, 100% right. I've heard all the same things. And I think that there's an opportunity, especially now that they have the spotlight with Lewis Hamilton coming in next year. And they clearly have a budget, because Ferrari just gets £50 million a year just because they're Ferrari. And, you know, they just have everything they need, except for that, like, that extra talent, the Adrian Newey, the couple of those tech directors, all those things. And, you know, like, if we look at someone like Aston Martin, what they did over the last few years was just buy the talent. And I think that if Ferrari does that same kind of move, I think that they have a really good shot at it. And if they are going to make that push at any point in time, now's the time to do it, because Lewis Hamilton's coming over and I don't think they're going to want to disappoint him. He is at the end of his career. And I really think that there's a chance that they're going to do everything in their power to pull out all the stops to make that happen. And I think it's a smart play, because, you know, not that, you know, let's say it. Yeah. It's kind of boring watching Red Bull win it all the time. And if, you know, I'm a Mercedes fanboy through and through, but if Ferrari can pull up their socks and make that happen, I'm into watching good F1 again. You know, that's how I want to look at that. Okay. But enough about that. Let's kind of shift gears here a little bit and head over to Audi And, you know, Audi made a big announcement last week saying that they're no longer just going to buy 75% of the Sauber outfit going into 2026, that they are going to buy 100% of it, which changes a lot of things, right? Because now they have the choices and options that they didn't have when they only owned 75% or even 50% as they were discussing. So let's figure out, you know, what Audi should do. Obviously our opinions on it, but what, like, if you guys had to pick two drivers for Audi 2026 to lead the charge and, you know, kind of make their stamp on F1 going into, you know, being a brand new works team, who would you pick as your top two drivers? I am going to make a caveat and say it can be anyone from the current F1 grid and from the current F2 grid. So you're not just pigeonholed to who's on the grid currently in F1. So, Ed, what do you got on this one? I can see your pondering face, and I like it. You're thinking hard. And money's honestly, not an issue. They can pay whoever.
No. I know, but I'm thinking about it like what all the other drivers are thinking of right now, because, you know what? I don't want to have it as a long-winded answer. I have a feeling that it's going to be Valtteri and Liam Lawson.
So basically, I heard, and I was under the assumption, maybe it's still going to be true, that Valtteri is definitely going to be one of their drivers, and maybe, you know, Carlos Sainz, something along that way. However, that is not my answer. If I were to choose personally, one of them would be Fernando Alonso going to Sauber, Audi Sauber. I think that'd be really interesting if he doesn't end up going to Mercedes or anywhere else, if it stays the way it is. But if that's not the case, then Liam Lawson and Ollie Bearman.
Liam Lawson and Ollie Bearman going with two rookies?
Yep.
Out of the gate, the blind leading the blind. I like it. Okay. You know what? With like 16 of the 20 contracts coming due at the end of this year, I can't remember the exact, but I'm pretty sure it's something ridiculous like that. You know, there's going to be so many driver swaps internally with the teams we have now that I'd be very interested to see who's going to even be available for Audi 2026, because they have to be in that fight now, right? And like, you know, I don't know for certain, but like if they sign with Sauber, Kick, F1, Stake Team, whatever the hell that shit is right now, if they sign up with them now into 2028, let's say hypothetically, does Audi have to just absorb whoever they pick, or are they going to get a free set of picks going into it? I guess it would be like whoever that Sauber signed right now, right?
That would be my assumption as well. Yeah, unless there's some sort of clause or something, exit clause.
Yeah, and like to me, if I had to pick a couple of drivers right now, like, you know, to your point, Thomas, I think that, you know, Valtteri Bottas had a shoe in there. That was talked about early days as soon as Audi was mentioned to being a works team. And, you know, more recently, we've heard about Carlos Sainz. This was obviously before Mercedes had the, you know, the open seat with Lewis, that it was Carlos Sainz and Valtteri Bottas. And I think those are great historic number two drivers, right? Like neither one of those drivers have been like the best in any way. And I think if Audi wants to make a splash, they either need to do what you did, Thomas, and go completely like old school and like take like a Fernando Alonso and then maybe pick that up by, you know, picking up one of the young guns like a Liam Lawson or a an Ollie Bearman or, you know, one of the new guys coming in, a Fittipaldi or what's that other kid's name, Ed?
I think it was like Maloney or something.
Yeah, there's a couple of those young guns. And, yeah. You know, there's a few options, I think, for them. But ultimately, you know, the reality is that, like, they need to start that fight now and figure out what that's going to look like going forward. And as a driver, like, if I turn that around and, like, if I'm a driver and I'm approached by Audi, you know, I guess, you know, my immediate reaction would be money talks. So, like, I don't even care who I'm driving for, fucking pay me, you know, like, that would be the first thing. But ultimately, like, let's assume that money is not an option and they will be able to pay me. I don't know if I would go with that team. Like, we just don't know what their reputation is going to be like yet. Like, Audi's saying that they're going to be developing their own engine for the 2026 season. Like, they're going to go full works team. And who knows what that's going to look like. You know what I mean? Like, are we going to have another Haas in play, or are we going to have, like, you know, something like an AlphaTauri or something like that, or, you know, Toro Rosso as they were at the time? You know, so I'm very interested to see what that's going to look like. There's so many options and countless variables that we can't even name them all. Like, realistically, like, there's no way. But let's put that one to bed. I want to move on to the fact that we're in Australia and we have a couple of the Aussie boys on deck this year. And Oscar Piastri and Danny Ric are both at their home race this weekend. I wanted to ask you, gentlemen, who do you think is under more pressure and who is more likely to outperform their teammate this weekend? We're going to start with you, Mr. Thomas. I'm going to give Ed his quick 2 minutes to think about this.
All right. This is actually an interesting question. At my heart, I want Danny Ric to fucking kill it. I want it. But in reality, I think Yuki is going to perform better than Danny Ric. Just because the way Daniel Ric has been performing lately, and I know it's only been like a couple races, but just from the first couple indicators, I think Yuki's going to outperform him. For McLaren, that's a tough one. But I'm going to say Piastri's going to outperform Lando because it's Piastri in his home race. So I think that's it's just going to give that edge. You know, you want to perform at your home race and you want to, you know, show off what you're capable of and be the best on the team. So those are my choices, Ed.
Okay, this is going to be out of left field, but stay with me on this one. I think Sergio Perez is going to perform. Why? Because the heat is off of him now. Everyone is now on Danny Ric. Like, what are you doing? You said you were going to perform. You said you're going to be a fantastic driver. We gave you the seat. What the hell is happening? So that's why I'm saying, like, Sergio Perez is going to perform because the heat is off of him now. It's now all on Danny Ric. And from the flip side of that coin, we don't know if Danny Ric is going to be the old honey badger that he was and, like, stick it to everyone else. Like, you know what? This is my home race. I'm going to prove to all of you guys why I have this seat. So we'll see again. But just like what you said, Tomas, I think he's going to shit the bed. I think it's going to be bye-bye Danny Ric. I think this is going to be another debris situation wherein when we get to the halfway point of the year, remember when I said at the start of the season, Sergio Perez might be on the way out halfway through the season 2024. I think I'm going to have to recant that and I'm going to say that it's going to be our boy Danny Ric out of that seat. Liam Lawson coming back in after the halfway point. And that's how things are going to roll. As for Oscar Piastri, that kid he's on fire. That guy's going to kill it 100%. Like, I am looking forward to how he will really perform this time around. Like, the McLaren has their issues with the car, but he's consistent. He kept a good race and a good battle between him and Lewis and Jeddah. So I'm so excited what will happen for the Australian Grand Prix. Drew?
You know what? Yeah, like, let's take this in two parts. Like, the first part is, you know, let's look back at the last couple of years at, you know, some of their drivers' home races. Like, look at Checo. That dude didn't even make it past the first corner in Mexico at his home race, you know? And then you got Yuki in Japan, and, like, he did terribly, absolutely awful. So, like, I'm wondering is, like, you know, is the pressure just a little bit too much when they're at their home race? And, you know, then you add the pressure of, like, you know, obviously Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris are, like, duking that out because I think they're both very well matched drivers, and then you have Yuki and Danny Ric, and, like, in my opinion, not even in my opinion, if you just look at the stats, like, Danny Ric is underperforming. Like, Yuki is absolutely out driving that guy on every track, every day, all the time. And I think the reality is I've kind of seen Danny Ric kind of slip into the, you know, the McLaren kind of excuses, you know, like, oh, like, I'm just not, you know, tied up to the car as much, and I'm not feeling the last time we saw Danny Ric with any sort of success was in a Renault, right? And the fact that I'm saying that is in, you know, I'm sure there's some listeners on here that don't even know what color that car was. You know what I mean? It's been that long. And so Danny Ric hasn't really been at the top of his game in a long time. And I think just his marketability, his personality, and Helmut Marko really gravitated towards that. But, you know, we all know that that Red Bull and Helmut Marko don't have any patience at all. And so the reality is, you know, once Helmut kind of made that publicly in the last couple of weeks that that Danny Ric's better shape up or ship out, I think that that pressure is going to come down. And I think it's going to compound, you know, with the fact that, you know, he's at his home race and he's got his friends and family around. And, you know, as a nice guy that I am, I really am rooting for him. And I really, really hope that he does well. But I think the reality is that he's not. I just really don't think he's been linked up with that car enough. And I don't think that, you know, this season has been the start that he needed. Let's hope that Danny Ric is able to turn that around, I think. And I would love to see him do well and get a little bit of attention, because I think him floating around in 17th place at the back of the grid is not something that he wants to do. And he's not getting the attention that he needs in order for his personality to come out. I think he's one of those guys that gets like that little bit of success and then it starts to snowball and he gets better and better. And like that momentum happens. But I think that, you know, up until now at this point in time, like he just hasn't had any of that since he's been back into a Formula One seat in a big way. Let's move on to Piastri. One more quickly.
For in regards to the whole Danny Ric, I don't think, or I don't agree with what Ed said. I don't think he's going to lose his seat halfway through the race. I still think he has a little bit of, like, you know, what we all talk, marketability. However, I do strongly believe that this is, like, essentially his final year to prove it. Hey, like, either perform or then essentially there's going to be no marketability left. And I think then they're going to have to make the tough call. So I think that's where he's headed.
You know what? 2 years ago, Thomas, I would have agreed with you wholeheartedly. I would have been like, yeah, for sure. He'll finish out the season. But after we saw the Nick DeVries situation, they didn't even wait the whole season. They got 10 races in. It wasn't even half a season. And they were like, okay, bye, buddy. We screwed up. We called it.
Come on.
Get out of here.
Come on. Nick DeVries had a very punchable face and not a lot of people like him. Danny Ric is a little bit different. Danny
Ric have a punchable face.
Charisma around him.
And he did not have the marketability that Danny Ric has. I will give that to you. And you know what? After reviewing that, you sold me. I do think Danny Ric will make it to the end of the season, because I think they printed too many shirts with Danny Ricciardo on the back of that that RB. And so they need to sell the shirts before they kick him out. Okay, moving on. Okay, so, you know, we're in Australia now. Albert Park has been notorious for some red flags, especially as of recent. Let's give your gentlemen's predictions on the number of red flags we're going to have this race, including like safety cars and virtual safety cars. And who do you think will be the guilty crashing parties? Thomas, this one's on you, bud.
Okay, for red flags, I'm going to go with two. I don't know why two, but two's in my mind. Two red flags. I'm going to. Okay, two red flags. Going to have four virtual safety cars, and I'm going to say two safety cars. And the person to first cause the crash, right? That was your question. Who's going to be like first one to cause it or something like that?
Yes, sir. Or culprits, because you have two red flags. So I'm assuming you need at least two people in order for these red flags to be caused. I could be wrong, but you know what? You might have three or four potentially in those red flags.
So, yeah. So I'm just trying to think logically, who could it be? It's hard to say since we don't know the starting grid. We don't know the starting order or anything. But first of them, I'm going to go with my homeboy from the US of A. Mr. Logan Sargeant is going to be one of them for sure. I don't know if that's going to be a red flag or a safety car or a virtual safety car, but I'm just going to put his name towards all three of them. He's going to be the culprit of at least one of them for sure. No, I'm serious. I
think that's a pretty safe bet. That's a safe bet.
Yeah. The other two, I'm going to say both Haas drivers.
Both Haas drivers?
One or the other. Not sure who, but one of the Haas drivers is going to cause an incident. Well, I'm not going to say if it's red flag or virtual safety car, but they're going to be involved in an incident. That's my safe bet. And you know what? I'm going to add one more just for shits and giggles. I'm going to say Ocon, just because Ocon.
Esteban Ocon, okay.
Taking everyone, Jesus.
I know, right? I know. He took all the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah. So that just makes it, we have to be a little bit more creative, Ed.
Yeah, I know. I guess I'm up, or are you up, Drew?
You're up. Let's go.
All right, I'm up. All right, so red flags, I'm going to say, depending on the weather, red flags, one for dry, three for wet. Virtual safety car, or safety car rather, I would say one for the crash by stroll. And then...
Damn. We're Canadian F1 podcast, so you just go straight for Stroll. God damn.
Yeah. No, you know Lance Stroll's our best shot at getting any sort of credibility here. You know that, right?
No, he's just shitting on the bed.
I know.
No, he's done. And then a repeat of last year, both Alpine drivers crashing into each other.
Okay.
So you already You already know, like, it's Stroll, Ocon, and Gasly. Those are my three drivers.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to go with two safety cars. I think that that one of the Haas drivers, I think Kevin Magnussen, he is going to have a DNF, and I think that that's going to cause a safety car because of where that car gets parked. And I think as far as crashes are concerned, I think that I'm going to have to agree with Thomas on this one. I think Logan Sargeant, this is a fast track, got some fast corners, and I think that Logan Sargeant's going to bin it, or he's going to hit it in the wall at some point. And I just don't think he's there. I don't think he's experienced enough at Albert Park to be able to show up. So those are my predictions on that one. But while we are speaking of fast tracks, I did want to discuss, you know, what kind of happened at the end of Jeddah. And we had Mr. Kevin Magnussen. Now, he got a couple of 10-second penalties, which are some of the new longer penalties that the FIA and the stewards have been enforcing. And these 10-second penalties, I've kind of been questioning, like, whether or not they're a good play or a bad play, because, you know, what we learned is that, you know, obviously Max Verstappen, when he's winning by 15, 20, 30 seconds a race, that the 5-second penalties weren't enough to kind of shake them or stop them from doing these things. So they came out with the 10-second penalties. Fantastic. In theory, the reality is when you get somebody like Kevin Magnussen, who just, you know, throws everything to the wind because he gets a couple of 10-second penalties, now his race is ruined. So now he knows, and, you know, hats off to the new principal at Haas. He was able to kind of like make a game time decision and kind of just tell Kevin Magnussen to hold everybody back for Nico Hülkenberg, which allowed him to have a free pit stop. Now, I guess my question to you guys is, do you think that the rules need a tweak to kind of like, you know, stop this from happening going forward? Or do you think that that's fair play, that, you know, this is the new reality of F1? And since they have these penalties, what some of these, you know, kind of back end teams and they're fighting for one point here, right? But that one point by the end of the season could be worth tens of millions of dollars, especially to these backmarker teams. So do you guys think going forward that these 10-second penalties are the answer, or should there be another solution? Ed, what do you got?
I think that's fair. Because like to address, which is a perfect point that you raised, the gap that Max Verstappen always brings out in every race now, it's average now. About 14 to 15 seconds, and that's average. So the 10 second will just kind of like close that gap just a little bit. But even at that point, it's probably not going to do anything. In terms of like holding back the pack, every single team has done this. Like one highlight that I will want to mention is in the 2016 battle between Rosberg and Hamilton. In the Yas Marina circuit in Abu Dhabi, like he was holding up, Lewis Hamilton was holding up Rosberg so that Vettel can catch him, so that, you know, Hamilton will be able to win the championship. He never got any penalties for that. They let it through. It was racing per se, and things happen, and that's part of racing. Like it's team orders, it's team strategy. They want to get as much dollars, points, and whatever accolades that they can get after that. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is, and this is me just chiming into the 2021 incident, Michael Massey getting, you know, holding up the entire pack for our boy Max Verstappen and having him win the championship. He lost his job. So who knows? Maybe FIA might do something about it. Just saying, not over it yet. Tomas.
Wow. Drew, to your points, great question. Short answer is I don't know. I think we need to see some more data, some more races to see exactly how it plays out. But to Max Verstappen, again, the 10-second penalty, 20-second penalty, you know, it might not mean too much. It might equal the playing field for the other teams, which is great. But for the benchmarkers, it, like you said, it's shit. If you're, you know, let's say 9th or 10th and you get a 20-second penalty or a 10-second penalty, you might be fucked essentially that race. Like, you're not scoring any points potentially. So I don't know. I would like to see personally some sort of tweak. I don't know what that would be yet. Lots of ideas. But like I said, short answer is we just have to wait and see. And the reality is, as these new regulations, these engines, these cars are becoming so powerful and so fast, deep down, I think the 10-second penalty is going to be the new norm just because where the technology of these cars are heading.
So I want to piggyback off that point because I think you brought up a great point, like with these cars, because like these cars are big, they're wide, and they're heavy. And like for somebody like Kevin Magnussen to be able to hold back all of those drivers for that long, you know, that Haas car is not good enough in theory to do that. You know, like, do you think that like it was a combination of like the fact that it was Jeddah and they were able to kind of like make themselves wide enough that nobody could pass? And like, do you think that the new regs should kind of tighten up the car's, you know, dimensions a little bit and kind of bring back a little bit of smaller cars? Because like, you know, we've been seeing this more and more that like, you know, drivers are able to hold back an entire pack of, you know, arguably faster cars for a long period of time. Like, do you guys think that, you know, changing the dimensions on the car is probably a solution?
I would agree. Cause like remember back when they were racing in Baku, in the previous car, there was a 3-stack for the back straight all the way down to the finish line. Like, that was racing for me. That was fun to watch because you don't know what could happen. Stroll got himself, he lost a position at the very last, like, what, 100 meters of the race?
To both.
I'm like, come on, right? So that's racing for me. But like with Jeddah, I tried it on my sim. It's a very tight track if you don't get it right. That's why even if it feels like it's a wide track, but the way to get it right, it's almost like a straight line. It's almost as tight as Monaco. I mean, I could be reaching here, but again, to my understanding on how to take the lines, like, that's my personal opinion towards that. But yes, I agree with you. Like, if we can make smaller cars, better racing. I mean, the ground effects have already done its course. Like, it's, you can now see how Red Bull has, you know, really pushed themselves to, you know, the stratosphere in terms of like their performance. But you do see second, third, and fourth, like, you know, the other teams still racing, you know, closely with each other. But yeah, a smaller car, a little bit more battles here and there. That I would love to see that again. Like, not just all Max.
Let me pose you guys another question then. Like, you know, as far as some of the rule changes are concerned, like, would you think that some of the, like, if they forced a driver to take a 5-second pit stop penalty after, instead of just a time penalty at the end of the race, do you think that that would stop people from doing things like this? Like, do you think that would be a much more fair penalty to hand out? Because, like, if K-Mag did this, that would stop him from doing, instead of giving him two 10-second penalties or 20 seconds in penalties, say, like, listen, you have to pit again within like a short amount of time, like within the next five laps, you have to pit and you have to serve a 5-second penalty during that pit stop. Like, do you think that would be enough? Because now they've taken them off the track. They can't do any of this like holding up the pack thing. So that strategy would be out the window. Like, do you guys have any other solutions on what you think would,
no, that,
would work?
That would be a good solution, actually. Because not only are you taking them out of the race, you're taking them out of contention. They're in the pits. They have to stop there for 5 seconds. Then they have to get out of the pits, stay on the pit limiter, and then have to deal with whoever is coming down the straights to negotiate to see if they're going to go ahead of that or behind that. I think that would be a really good way of just like deterring this type of strategy.
I think so.
Tomas, what do you
that,
think?
That to me was the best thing I could think of when I was originally coming up. Like, what is a solution then? Because I don't want to just come with problems. You know what I mean? You got to come up with some sort of solutions.
No,
you
I agree.
Tomas?
I agree with you guys. Would I love to see smaller, you know, smaller dimension cars? Oh, absolutely. I think that would bring some good racing, or at least we think so. The reality is, are we going to see? I don't think so. Just because of the whole safety standards and the halos and all that stuff, I don't see Formula One going smaller dimension cars as much as I would love to. In regards to the penalties, what Ed said, yeah, that would make sense. If you know, someone's holding up the pack, bam, you have to stop. Or as you, Drew said, you have to stop within five laps. You have to serve that 5-second penalty. And then, you know, you could go back. It would stop a lot of this bullshit and playing around. And I think it would make a lot more interesting racing. But then, again, the whole other point is, you know, teams could start to argue that's not fair. This is our strategy. And it could open up a whole another door and gray area into where this could go.
Cool. Yeah, I agree. You know what? Reflecting back, I think that, you know, will Formula One make the cars smaller? I think if they do, it would be negligibly smaller. I don't think they're ever going to go back to like the early 2000s, late 90s kind of, like, it's not going to happen. But let's head back to Australia and Albert Park, because this weekend we have the Australian Grand Prix. We are going to be doing 58 laps there. We got a 5-kilometer race. I want to hear some predictions for you guys. Let's get on your poll. 1, 2, 3. Let's go, Tomas.
So, one, I'm not even going to say because we all know his name. Two, I'm going to go with Chuckles LaBuckles. Three, I'm going to say Piastri. Four, Leclerc.
I love that we do four because we just know that Max Verstappen's going to win. I love that. Like, if we have to guess three, the first one's a given. Okay, Ed, what do you got for me, homeboy?
I would say, you know, I'm going to be bold on this one. Piastri 2, Perez 3, Russell 4.
Okay. You think that the Mercedes is going to be up there? I like it. Okay. Let's go back to, we have to. Max is going to be number one. I think Charles Leclerc is going to be number two, and I would love to see Oscar Piastri in the number three position, and I think that I'm going to put Lando Norris on number four. I think that, you know, whether Carlos Sainz is back or whether Ollie Bearman's in there, I don't think he's going to make that top four spot. It's just not going to happen. I think that that Charles Leclerc has the best shot at that. I think Sergio Perez is, you know, to your point earlier, Ed, I think, you know, Sergio Perez is, the pressure's off him. And now that all the eyeballs and all of Red Bull are taking a look at Danny Ric, you know, I think that, not to go back to that again, but I think Danny Ric is absolutely going to implode over the pressure. Like, the wheels are just going to fall off that car physically, literally, metaphorically, every way that I can mean it. The tires are going to come off this weekend.
I hope you eat your words, Drew.
I actually do. I really hope that I have to eat my words, and I hope it tastes like anything delicious that they eat. What are they, yam yams or something like that? What do they eat over in Australia?
Vegemite.
That's that spread that goes over top of toast, right?
It's yes,
kind of like the Australian Nutella.
Yeah, but tastes horrible. I've tried it.
It looks like fucking sandpaper, dude. It looks absolutely awful.
But, yeah, no.
Do you guys got any comments, any questions, yes. anything you guys want to? Yes, you do. Okay. Okay. Let's yes. go. Let's go, Thomas.
So first of all, a little bit of a way back when we were talking about the car comparisons, I saw a post not too long ago. Anyone listening to any of their listeners, Google RB1 compared to like, I think RB18 or 19, and you're going to see the size difference in the car. And it's insane. RB1 looks like a freaking toy car compared to what's out there. So I thought that was very, very interesting to see. And I forgot my second point, so that's all I have for now. Oh, second point. I want to give a shout out to my coworker Luke G. He's a fan of the podcast, so thank you for listening.
We always love to do that. We should do some shout outs for the listeners, man. I get
yeah,
that,
we like, should. I
all
like
the
that.
People in the Discord and stuff like that. I know that we got a couple of fans that that listen very regularly, and we appreciate the loyalty in a big, big way. So let's wrap that up. I'd like to tell everyone again, if you are listening to this on Spotify, Apple Podcast Music, wherever you get your podcast from, please like, subscribe, rate, leave a review. As long as it's a nice review, I don't want shitty reviews. You can keep those. But yeah, jump in the Discord. The link will be in the show notes. The Discord's a lot of fun. We got a lot of peeps in there that are really, you know, into F1 as a sport, and we keep it pretty social with the with some memes and social medias and all that kind of stuff, and it's a lot of good race chat, and it's a spot to be. So yeah, that's it, man. Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate you guys listening, and we'll be back next week after the Australian Grand Prix with a little review on what happened, and we'll get ready for the next race.
Sounds good.
Mint.
Bye for now.
All right, later, guys.